Thank you very much. Happy Halloween weekend to everybody. All Saints Day is not until next Thursday. And a little Rolling Stones for you tonight. Can you, this is mean. They're calling them strolling bones now. But get this. Mail Online says that they're even better than they were 30 years ago. Rolling Stones back with a bang at Intimate Paris warm-up gig. A mad rush for tickets as the British rockers, the Rolling Stones, announce a secret Paris warm-up gig on this past Thursday. The biggest rock stars in the world did not disappoint, as the lucky few who managed to bag tickets were treated to a night of the band's classic hits. I tell you, Sir Mick just doesn't quit. And by the way, we had a little technological anomaly earlier, but I want to let you know, if you don't already, that California is not on a tsunami warning, a warning after a British Columbia earthquake, which was a 7.7 magnitude, that hit northwest Canada earlier tonight at 9.04 p.m., just centered near a remote area of Prince Rupert, B.C., according to the U.S. Geological Survey. No reports of damage. Hawaiian authorities are monitoring any dramatic sea level changes. Santa Barbara officials say they will provide updates on the situation as they become available. So we'll watch that for you. And now for the second half, the glass is not half empty. It's half full. We have David Reuven coming up, host of Extreme Results Radio, works with Hollywood celebrities, Fortune 500 CEOs, even billionaires, as both a personal and professional mentor and coach and dream decoder. Having experienced a three-day-long out-of-body experience, an NDE, and three life-altering lucid dreams, David is an expert on intuition development and navigating lucid, prophetic, and terrorizing dream experiences. This will be interesting. David Reuven is next on Coast to Coast AM. Let us, without much further ado, bring onto the bridge of the mothership, David Reuven. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Great pleasure to be here, John. Thank you.
Very happy to have you. You know, and not to trivialize any of this, but I'm serious. Most of us, I'm going to hazard a guess and say most of us have heard these expressions. You know, incubus starts Friday. Stuff like that's like, I don't know what an incubus is, but it can't be good. I've also heard people, oh, that guy is like the incubus. It's like, okay. And then I recently began to hear succubus. It's like, what is that? Is that a time bandit or an energy vampire? What is that? So would you mind, first of all, tell us what an incubus and a succubus is, and then tell us how you got into studying these paranormal things, because they're definitely paranormal.
Well, maybe I could start with the story of my own life, and we can get into what these particular demons are, because there are many. An incubus actually is the spirit of a demon that has been on the earth for thousands of years, and it will inhabit either male or female bodies and have sexual intercourse with them in their dreams. The succubus is a female, a specifically female demon, and will do the same thing, except for specifically targets men. I myself have been targeted by these demons throughout
really?
My life.
And did you say incubus can be either?
It is a female demon, and it really
a succubus is. But what about the incubus?
And they're sort of interchangeable, but the succubus is really focused on men.
All right.
And yes, I've had a lot of paranormal experiences starting in my very early childhood. I was one of those children who always thought there was something under my bed, and I had horrible dreams and nightmares, as most children do. But one difference, and that is that when I went into my parents' room, they didn't tell me, go to sleep, there's nothing there. They said, come on and get in here with us, and they never told me that I was crazy and that I was wrong about what I was sensing. And I'm still, to this very day, I cannot put my arm or my hand or my feet over the bed. It is something I just can't do. It's a reflex, I guess you would say. Even though I know at this point in my life that I'm fairly well protected from whatever might be lurking about. But I had dreams, horrible dreams, and most of them involved death. When I was a child, I had dreams of falling, as many people do. It's a very common dream, a nightmare. falling off of a tower of some sort and seeing yourself hit the ground and then waking up. This happened to me hundreds and hundreds of times. So it's what really propelled me, or it compelled me, to understand what is going on in my own mind. What is in there that's trying to make me fear going to sleep to begin
well,
with?
Well, seriously, that's enough to just plain wear you out.
My friend, it was horrible. And I know that people that have suffered with the dreams and nightmares, you know, I know that in third world cultures, they take them to the witch doctor and they try to do incantations over them. But you see, we got to understand what it is we're dealing with. If we don't understand what we're dealing with, we can't fight it. And so as I went through these experiences as a child, I actually, at the age of 10 years old, I'm going to reveal this for the first time ever on radio. I was awakened in the very early morning when the sun was just coming up at the age of 10 years old to see a winged demon come down and literally land on the window of my bedroom, at which point I picked up my BB gun that was by my bed and I shot a hole in the window. My parents came running into the room. I told them what happened. I said this demon was there and I didn't know what to do, so I shot the window and then it flew away and I watched it. They didn't tell me, you're crazy. I didn't get in trouble. They said, you're going to be okay.
What did this thing look like, David?
The best thing I can describe, and it's interesting to note that if there's a movie called Jason and the Argonauts. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, the old one.
Yes.
With the skeleton men.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a scene in that movie where there's a blind man that is imprisoned on an island, and these two flying demons deliver food to him, and then they promptly take it away. I don't know if you remember that scene.
Were those the ones they called the harpies?
The harpies, exactly.
Yeah, gotcha.
Exactly like a harpy. And I
That's
had not
disgusting.
Seen the movie. I had not seen the movie, so when I saw that movie, I said, oh,
oh
my God.
Oh, man.
These things are not just the figments of our imagination. So the question is then, what are demons? People say, oh, there's no such thing as a figment of your imagination, or it's, you know, it's bad karma or something of that nature, but it's not true. If people look back far enough in history, if we look at the old scriptures, the ancient texts, and there's actually a book that is has been written and has been validated by a great many scholars. It's called The Lost Books of the Bible and the Forgotten Books of Eden. In that book, it describes the fall of the angels from heaven, and there was a mutiny, and a third of the angels were thrown out of heaven. Well, those were the first aliens to arrive on this planet, because before they were thrown out of heaven for rebelling against their creator, Earth was heaven. And when they came from wherever they came from, whatever dimension, whatever place they came from, here, this is where we get the concept of shapeshifters, the story of Adam and Eve, something of taking possession of a serpent. It wasn't a serpent. It was a demon that had taken possession of this flesh and blood thing and was able to use its body. So these ideas that we have about shapeshifters and demons, they're real. And it is because exactly what happened, as it has been told, thousands, maybe, who knows, millions of years ago. Maybe it's happened more than once. Who knows? But if we want to understand the alien force that we're dealing with that we call evil, let's identify it. Fallen angels, taken on a cloak of darkness, cannot exist in any form of light. Not like in the daylight so much as it is in the light of consciousness.
Let's get a little foundation going here, David, and you're well on your way to building one.
Yes.
How is it that people are able to believe in absolutely everything other than a battle between good and evil? To me, after a few decades of thought, a little quivering on occasion when I behold the awesomeness of our immediate universe, let alone what lies beyond our senses, if it's not a battle between good and evil, none of this makes any sense to me at all.
Absolutely. I think that it strains the imagination to open the mind of a person that can see the amazing properties of nature, the self-renewing properties of everything, including our own bodies, and not see that there's an intelligent designer behind it. It strains the imagination that people can believe in anything but this one idea that you mentioned very accurately, by the way.
Yeah, they run from it.
Well, they do, because, you see, again, let's talk about what's happened to the human race over thousands of years. The war between good and evil. What is the war? Why is there a war? Well, because there are two powers that are working between us. And if that wasn't the case, then what would we have on Earth? Would we not have heaven on Earth if there weren't two forces constantly pulling at human beings?
We deliberately keep ourselves in a... I think we keep ourselves deliberately. I mean, part of us, and I went into this a little bit with Jack earlier, but not as deeply as I'd hoped to, and I'd like to get into it some more with you. We keep ourselves from being what we could be. We would have to change our consciousness collectively and actualize our capabilities, our potential capabilities, and make them kinetic for this thing to work and make a heaven on Earth. I mean, this is a thing where if you really stretch out there, cure disease, no need for violence, never crosses anybody's minds. It just doesn't, because we've left that savage killing instinct behind. We've left the rape and pillage mentality behind us. But something in the human being keeps us from doing that.
Yes, and what that is a force. And when we look at many conditions that plague human beings, we have to observe that people are under compulsion to act out. I mean, if you ever look closely at murder itself, you can see the presence of evil at work in any form of murder, in any act of violence. You can see that there is a fingerprint of evil. But, you know, of course, then we would have to admit one other thing, and that is something you mentioned, John, and that is, why is it that everybody can believe in anything but this idea that there is a creator, that there is a war between good and evil? If we were to acknowledge that there is an evil, then we would have to acknowledge that there's a source of evil and that there's also a source of everything else. And what happened at the fall of the human race was that people had to blind themselves to this idea that there is a supreme being, so that they could forget that they are constrained by the laws of this designer. I mean, if you look at the idea that eventually an artificial intelligence will become a very real component of human existence, there are laws that are written to prohibit robots from hurting their masters. These laws are being written. They've already been written. They've been conceived of for dozens, if not, I don't know how many years, 50, 100 years, the idea that robots would eventually be servants of human beings. But the first law of robotics is that the robot shall do no harm.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh, it is interesting. And so if you look at the idea that we have to be careful that we program our servants not to do a sin, we're also looking at the problem that we have human beings who are masters of other human beings. And this is something that really shouldn't be. This is a violation of some cosmic law or principle, and that lust for power, that desire to be above another person or to destroy another person, that is evil. And that is the antithesis of good.
Isn't it funny? It wouldn't seem to occur to more people that while this nation or any other nation or culture was fairly stable and behaving themselves and was, you know, basically observe some social mores of decency, which are all based in respect for the other person, and you don't demand that respect, it goes along with your coexistence because you are also conducting yourself that way. But things are built, things that last are built. wonderful discoveries are made and diseases are cured. But then, as the society or nation deteriorates, you have more, so to speak, you have more drugs but fewer cures, more lawsuits, more corruption.
You're still right on. I mean, but, 1,000%.
Okay, well, just I just want to make sure we're in the same groove, since we didn't really have a chance to talk before we got on the air together. But I'm thoroughly enjoying this, so take it away. Take it anywhere you'd like to go.
Well, let me go back to this attack that I experienced as a 10-year-old. I saw this thing. It landed on my window. I shot a hole in the window with my BB gun because I didn't know what else to do. I became aware at a very early age that there was more to the life that I was living than I could really understand. And I was frightened, but at the same time, I was curious. What is going on in my life that I'm having these terrible dreams of death, falling off of towers, giant hands reaching out of the sky to pick me up? What are these dreams? Why me? Well, this leads me to an interesting event horizon in my life, which you mentioned at the beginning of the show. At the age of 13, I went to sleep one night. I woke up the next morning, and I'm hovering about 6 to 8 feet above myself, and I'm watching myself sleep. My consciousness is there outside of me, like a man outside of a spacecraft out in space. And I'm thinking to myself, that's me. Then I watch myself wake up in the morning, brush my teeth, eat breakfast, go to school, talk to my friends. I mean, everything that I would do as a 13-year-old, I watched myself do in astonishment. I became aware of the way I walked, the way I talked, the people who I was friends with. I understood them and saw them in a way I'd never seen people before. Later on that night, I went home, watched myself eat dinner, talked to my parents, go to sleep. It happened again the next day. I started to get worried. I think, well, where am I coming back into my body? This is doesn't seem right. Happened all again the next day. The third.
Good grief. That's worse than Groundhog Day by 100-fold.
No, this is seriously.
No, I'm serious.
And at the end of the third day, I just had resigned myself. This is the way it's going to be for me. I didn't know what else to do. It seemed like a million years that I'd been out in space. I woke up the next morning after the third day. I was back in my body, and I remembered everything that had happened.
How did you feel physically while you were out of it, David?
I didn't feel anything.
Oh, you didn't feel anything?
I didn't feel anything. I had no feelings, no emotions, no fears, no worries, no nothing.
No physical feeling at all, no body rushes, no tingling, nothing.
It would be as if today, if you put a remote camera on a helmet, you know, 6 feet above yourself, and you just watched everything and heard everything that went on.
I've never heard anything like this in my life.
That was very clinical. I mean, there was nothing. There's no feeling about it. I just didn't understand, why am I here? Well, when am I going back? But when I came back, I had something that I didn't have when I popped out, and that was I had a much deeper understanding that life is very different than we perceive it to be. That, in fact, we are not the body that we inhabit. That something that we are inside of us is not us. It is a uniquely separate part of our existence, and that is our soul, whatever that is. I don't know what it is yet, but that's what I experienced, and I knew that from that day forward, and nothing could ever take that experience away from me, and it shaped my life. And today I'm almost 59 years old, and every day of my life since, I have walked this tightrope that I understand between two worlds. Very much like the movie that Keanu Reeves was in, where he was able to go between dimensions. He was able to go between heaven and earth. I see these things, and I see them now in people. I see the evil show up on a person's face in the form of a skeleton or a demon, very much like the show Grimm that's on ABC or NBC on Friday nights.
Mm-hmm.
I see them. I see them in people.
You know, it's funny. I observed that very face you're talking about one time. It was a guy that hung around this particular street all the time. He was a homeless guy, clearly an alcoholic, probably a Sterno drinker. And he'd say something to you, and you'd say something back to him, and he'd just sit down, and you could swear that when he grinned at you, he was the devil himself. Tell you what, David, let's get into this and ever so much more as we carry on through Saturday night. Happy Halloween weekend, everybody. Some of this is actually not ceremonial. In fact, I think a lot of it is real. Maybe even most of it. This is Coast to Coast AM. There's some easy grooving music for y'all out there tonight. I like to use that y'all thing. That's a southern thing, and we have the mothership moored down south. Away from the earthquakes of the Pacific Northwest, the potential tsunamis, and the hurricanes on the East Coast. I sincerely hope everybody on the East Coast gets themselves battened down, get ready for this thing. It may turn out to be nothing. It could miraculously, and perhaps a collective consciousness, a little push on that thing might shove it back out to sea. Maybe we'll call for that before the end of the program. Nip this thing in the bud, because it's moving rather slowly up the East Coast, but it's going to be real serious around there, just right there on Halloween. So everybody get ready. Just better be prepared and not need to be than need to be and be woefully unprepared. Okay? Very good, my friends. All right. Incubus and succubus. And a lot of people have complained. And in fact, it's really strange. Before tonight's program with David Rubin, I've actually heard more tales of people feeling like they're being assaulted in their sleep than ever before. So it's, is it a coincidence, or is it as Obi-Wan Kenobi said in his experience, there's no such thing as coincidence? Well, I don't know. I be John Kenobi, and we'll be back with David Rubin in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. David Rubin, let's see, can your website be accessed with just coachdavid.me?
No, actually.
Do we have to do /home_page.html and all that?
Actually, John, I have a website that is just davidrubin.net, R-U-B-E-N.net, and I have a gift for your listeners.
Excellent.
A free download of an exercise that I designed, and I've been using it myself for 45 years. It's called Campfire for the Mind. And it is exactly what people need to cure what you have said. There is no coincidence here. Everybody is plagued by dark things for one reason or another. But if you light a campfire in your mind, those things have to stay away. It's at davidrubin.net.
Davidrubin.net. I'll mention that several times over the course of the show. And that way you don't have to and won't feel like a shameless self-promoter. I don't really have a problem being a shameless self-promoter, but you might.
Well, you know, now, it's from my own suffering that I have produced something that is somewhat remarkable in that I've tried it on my own children. I have two little boys, and everything that I do, I run it past them first. So it's tested on children, and it works.
Really?
On everyone. Absolutely.
Now, I don't want to get ahead of your story here, because you seem like a man who believes in a beginning, a middle, and an end. So are we going to find out why your parents were so cool about you taking a shot with the BB gun at the demon at your window?
Well, I can tell you this, that my father is a theoretical physicist, so he doesn't poo-poo unusual ideas.
Gotcha. Well, that pretty much puts it into focus, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm lucky. A lot of parents don't want to deal with this dark reality. The subconscious world, which is a world that many people describe as being more real than the life we live in. That in comparison, this world of the subconscious makes this life that we live every day feel like a dream.
That's quite a pregnant thought, sir. All right, now let's go back to incubus and succubus.
Yes.
I need a little clarification here.
Yes.
They are similar, but they are not the same.
One is more specifically targeted to men, which is the succubus.
Yes.
It is a female form. It comes to seduce men in their fantasies. Men have fantasies. Demons know this. Men have different kinds of fantasies. Most of them have a sexual component. Most of that has to do with power and control. Domestic violence, it's all about power and control. One person being controlled by another, very unhealthy relationship. Either way.
Imagine how unhealthy it is when governments do it. Never mind, that's another story.
It's horrifying. No, I'm totally in agreement with you on that, too. But unfortunately, the government power is derived from the power of the unconscious mind. Because as you have said, John, when people awaken and when they collectively see something, that collective vision, that collective awareness drives a stake through the heart of whatever it is that's dark.
Well, that's why we're trying to get the word out here. I'd still like a satisfactory explanation as to these hundreds of millions and now billions of rounds of ammunition being purchased by the Homeland Security Department. I don't get it, but again, that's a topic for another time. I don't understand what everybody's gearing up for, but I'm not going to say everybody, but a measurably large percentage of the population seems to be gearing up for something, and certainly most of the government is.
Well, again, I mean, let's look at the idea of power and control. You know, this country was founded differently than any other country in the world, in the history of the world, even going back to ancient Greece, which had the first democracy that we know of. This country was founded with an idea that there was a God, and that we were subject to this God, and that the truths that that God speaks are self-evident, and that all men are created equal. So this is a government that did not want people to be the sons and daughters of slaves, as had been so for many thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. We were to be born free. I was just finishing reading the biography of Abraham Lincoln. What an epic struggle he went through with the South to try to convince people they didn't have the right to own other people. 600,000 people died in the Civil War, more people in any war since, before or since, in this country. 600,000 people laid down their lives for an idea that men and women were to be created equal and be free and not be subject to slavery.
That was some brutal warfare, too. That was right on the edge of shock warfare.
Yes,
terrible.
The worst kind. But you see, the warfare that also covers is the warfare that men were fighting the evil of enslavement, of ownership, of power and control over the lives of other people. But this is deeper than anybody understands, John. It goes back to the beginning of human history, that human beings have been born in slavery ever since the beginning of time. And to slavery, to what? To control of unseen forces. There is no conspiracy. It's all real. It's only a conspiracy. We've called it a conspiracy because we don't really know how to wrap our minds around how true it is. It is real. It's real. All of it is real. The things that are under the bed, well, it's real. It's real. At some level, it's real. And to those who will not see, there are none so blind.
But to that's for sure.
There are none so awake.
Well, I got to tell you, this whole political thing is, we try and stay away from politics here, but I don't stay too far off of it if I think it's of interest to our listeners. But I'll tell you, it's enough to just keep you walking on the side of your head all the time, because it's like if the planet itself is not messing with us, it seems like our governments are. And, they're either really energized or they're absolutely apathetic. And I think apathy is really dangerous now.
Well, it goes back to the essential question, John. Why has the United States risen to the height of power among nations of the world? If we go back to our humble beginnings as a nation, it is because there was a divine component placed above all the rest. So America had a moral mandate to free other nations from the tyranny of slavery and mass control. That's why this country, but this, at the same time, the reason why this country is in decline is because evil has occupied seats of power. And we know what we have to call it what it is. We can't just say it's corruption, because corruption can be many things. We have to say that evil is evil. And you know what evil says? It is evil that says there is no evil.
Always. Yes, that's very interesting. It's I was reading a report about, death squads, a la El Salvador and the Central American countries. And it's like people have to make them, in order to be a member of a death squad, you have to believe that you're in the right.
Absolutely.
And that goes to what you just said.
Yes. I watched the movie Blood Diamond with absolute horror when they took the young boys out of their homes and brought them to their education camps, their training camps, and they pulled one of the boys out of the line and they made one of the other boys shoot him. Because you see, that's how they created the loyalty, a sick, wicked, dark loyalty to the corrupter, to the person who traumatized them. And so all those boys knew they would be next if they didn't do what their masters told them to do. And that's the sickness of the world that we live in. I was talking to a wonderful person from Romania who was there during communism. And when the communists came in, suddenly everybody was looking at everybody, watching everybody, reporting on everybody. It was a psychological warfare. But you see, nightmares, John, are psychological warfare by evil. Because to deprive people, human beings, of sleep, to assault them sexually or violate them with violence and horror in their resting time.
Moral terror.
It's moral terrorism. It makes it a dysfunctional population that needs more and more kinds of remedies. But there is only one remedy, and that is to put the campfire back in the mind, to keep the dark things away.
So nightmares are psyops run by demons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They have a pecking order. Just like on Earth here, they have to do what they're told to do. They have no other choice. It's what they've become. And they do what they do because they have to. They've lost their freedom for whatever reason. Just like we lose our freedoms as individuals as we go across certain boundaries. And as we begin to imagine things that we shouldn't even imagine. Because remember, thought comes before action. But where does the thought come from? So there's something that I call the awakening. And that is that when you begin to become aware that your life is not your own, that you're not the person you thought you were, that you're living a life that is sort of a construct. It's sort of imaginary, like people who do Facebooking a lot, you know, and they go out to dinner and they put the pictures and they make everybody think that their life is really great and that's all they have to live for. They're living for this illusion that other people are watching what they're doing and that other people envy them and that they're setting some kind of trend, and it's all a delusion. But everybody's doing it.
It is a new phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah, but see, it's because when you have no life, what you do is you try to get people to see you because you don't exist otherwise.
How can someone overcome that feeling that they really don't exist? There's a lot of that out there.
Well, when you are in a herd of sheep, when you're one sheep in a herd of many sheep, you know, there is security in numbers. I mean, some people don't want to be the odd man or woman out. I couldn't help it. I was compelled. I was popped out of the herd. Then I became a target. I was beat up as a young teenager by bullies at school. I was stuffed in trash cans. People saw me as a target. And you are targeted when you begin to stand out, when you begin to realize things that other people fear to realize, that you're a pawn in a game of life and death, a chess game of morality, and that you have to be kind of careful about what moves you make, because there are these things called consequences that make us aware that we've crossed the line somewhere.
Yep.
Who wants to be the kid that gets picked on for standing up? I mean, I did something as ridiculous as writing an article in my school, high school newsletter or newspaper. I called it Gaudy Metal and Ego Trips because I was a surfer when I was a teenager. And I didn't believe in the competitions because I knew the guys that surfed in my town. And the guys that performed for the judges were the guys that always won, not the best surfers. And that was my main point. It's like the whole nature of competitive sports, at least at some level, takes away the love of doing it. And it becomes a grind. It becomes an appeasement of sorts to make people see you in a certain light. Yeah, there are people that are better than others, but the best people don't compete. They're just out there doing what they love to do. But you know something? I sat on the senior lawn. and I got apples thrown at me. And I mean, literally, it was like a war scene. After that article came out, the guys in the high school, the football team, were after me. What do you mean competition's bad? I didn't say that. I didn't say competition was bad. I love competition. Free enterprise, it's all good. But the spirit of trying to conform to get approval is a sick thing. It's sick. And everybody does it at some level. And some people would say, well, what am I going to do if I don't conform? Guess what? You are going to stand out. And you might get picked on, and some people are even murdered. I mean, in third world countries, when you stand up to the dictator, they kill you right away. I mean, fortunately, in this country, we still have a semblance, a little bit of freedom of speech left. Thank God for people like John Wells.
Some people would argue that point. You know, I was a fan of Patrick McGoohan's The Prisoner.
I love that show. I loved it.
The right of the individual to be individual, and this assembly rises to you, sir.
Brilliant show. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And just just created almost an outrage over there. They couldn't believe that somebody would produce a program like this suggesting the things it suggested, like massive population control, absolutely no privacy. I mean, this McGoohan back in 1960, what was it, 8?
Yeah.
Had these wonderful-looking cottages where these retired spies would go. And this guy was a target because he wouldn't tell anybody why he resigned. I mean, he was so ahead of the curve, as we say.
Yeah.
Cameras and roving, you know, mindless police, you know, that rover ball. If you were out of line, the thing would just come and paralyze you, and you'd wake up in the nut house for a little reprogramming. And behold.
Did you ever have nightmares about that kind of thing? I did.
I never had nightmares about that. I had a nightmare or two after The Blob with Steve McQueen.
That was a horrible one, too, yeah.
But I saw it recently, and I thought, gee, this is a really bad movie.
Yeah, but when we were young, everything was different reality.
Well, you know, and the other one that was totally scary was Invaders from Mars, where the little boy, did his father cease to be anybody that he understood?
I mean,
what could be more terrifying to a kid than to have one of your parents just become a total stranger because the aliens drilled him in the back of the head and implanted him or something?
Yeah, the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah, creepy black and white TVs to watch it on made it even more horrifying. Well, I digress with this, just only slightly though. All right, so if you would even consider the proposition that people keep themselves distracted, and this one way or another, some people require big distractions and some really little distractions are sufficient to keep them from thinking about those things that they otherwise would. Sort of like when, I can't remember, it was the Greeks, the Romans, I think it was the Greeks, whenever they would take what they call leisure time, it didn't mean like lying around drinking beer. It was time that they took out from their work to think about higher things.
Absolutely.
And I can't remember the last time somebody told me, what are you doing? Well, I'm just having some leisure time, exploring in my mind higher ideals and other things. So I take it that sex and internet porn has been a huge influence on providing a distraction that some people require.
This is a very interesting thought, John, and that is that they actually did a study, and here's what they found about viewing porn. That when immediately following the viewing of a pornographic image, a person has a moment of amnesia. This is actually clinically studied. And I thought, now it makes sense to me that it wipes the mind for whatever reason, so that what person gets is a sense of relief from the constant grind of thinking and the constant grime of trying to escape from that thinking. And so when their mind is wiped, but guess what? That's the nature of addiction. The mother of addiction is that mind wipe, that moment of escapism that directly follows the exposure to the pornographic image. That's the addiction. It's not the pornography that's addicting. It's that moment of release. You see, and that is the nature of evil. It'll give you a tiny little crumb that'll take everything you have in order to give it to you.
David, that is absolutely extraordinary. All right, I'm really glad to have you on the program tonight. And according to this inbox, there are a few million of our closest friends who are glad you're on the program, too. We'll continue with David Rubin in just a minute. We have another hour with him tonight on Coast to Coast AM.